From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of March 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in our program, we'll be joined by K-State University Extension's Dan O'Brien to take up the agricultural energy markets, ethanol in particular. Along the way, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 6th day of March 2017. It's the day before our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. If you've got your tickets, please do show up at 8 a.m. in the Central Time Zone tomorrow. Your coffee and a roll in the morning, your meal there, and we'll run throughout the day. Thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow. And one of the people to be up on stage with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's from Bates Commodities and now joins us from his Normal, Illinois office. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, I'm looking forward to our time together. I bet you've been working on something good. You always do, to give the folks at the Beef House.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Mainly just kind of answer the questions. The main goal probably has been as same as from here on out, to try to get everybody from point A where we're at to point B where you want to be. But the main question is that guys have sold beans and they still have their corn, and what should I do? So at 1:15 tomorrow afternoon, Central Time, we'll tackle that issue there, Todd.
Absolutely, and the folks in the audience will get a chance to hear that. But let's hear a little bit about what happened in Chicago today. Looked like it was pretty quiet. Was that the case?
Well, quiet, but active in a sense. Overnight, we were somewhat firm, seeing some buying interest, mainly wheat. Wheat seemed like it wanted to put a little weather premium in it with this warmer weather and wheat greening up. See a situation where it starts to get some growth to it, and we'd happen to have a cold snap down the road here. There could be a little excitement there. We did not see any new world wheat demand, for say. Countries continue to shop elsewhere than the U.S. Wheat spread activity, buying wheat, selling corn, and buying wheat and selling beans, unwinding some of those short wheat legs. On the bean side, saw some interest on shifting some demand to the Gulf. The Pacific Northwest continues to be plugged up. Saw some speculative buying come in, and that gave some early support. But as the day wore on, talk of beans started to move to the ports a little bit more in a timely fashion. The wet areas of Brazil drying out here for the next 10 days, and particularly Highway BR-163, which handles a lot of truck traffic, is a little bit more operative. And tomorrow, anybody that stops by, I have problems with BR-163. Tomorrow, if anybody stops by and gives us the code word BR-549, we got a little special gift for them tomorrow, Todd. So, a limited supply, so you got to use the code word there early. So, we'll give you a little.
Only if you watch television. Everybody will know.
but that road drying out, moving traffic a little bit more early fashion, kind of kept a lid on things. One day port strike. We'll see how that is handled here as we move down the road. And then corn, continue to work with big supplies, but, some fairly good demand as we move forward here. Big event other than Tuesday will be Thursday, of course. We'll have the monthly supply-demand numbers come out. U.S.-wise, corn carryouts expected to be about 2.317. That's about 3 million bushels less. Export, firm. Ethanol's firm. Bean-wise, same situation. A 418 million bushel carryout is expected versus 420 last month. You know, those are good numbers, but they expect to come down over time. Probably the big numbers to watch, and these continue to move daily, as the southern hemisphere Argentina corn is expected to be about 36 million metric tons, about unchanged from last month. A year ago, it was only 29. Argentine beans, 55.2 million tons. Then you go into Brazil, Brazilian corn estimates just all over the place, anywhere from 86 to 91 million metric tons. Last year they produced 67, so that's a growing number. And of course, the Argentina bean number, average trade guess is about 106 million metric tons. Last month we were 104, but there's higher estimates of 109 million metric tons. So those numbers come out and they'll kind of give some numbers, some estimates for the trade to work off for a few weeks.
Right. We'll talk more with you tomorrow afternoon. Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you at the Beef House.
See you bright and early. Thanks.
You betcha that, of course. Kurt Kimmel, he's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, otherwise known as APHIS, says it has found highly pathogenic avian influenza in a commercial chicken flock in southeastern Tennessee, a discovery that's sure to renew concerns of another mass outbreak after the one that killed 48 million birds in 2015. The agency says it's the first confirmed of high-path avian influenza in a commercial flock in the U.S. this year. Well, the Farm Bill will be one topic at hand across the nation this week from coast to coast. On the West Coast, the folks meeting with the National Farmers Union at their annual convention will present a farm policy program on Wednesday of this week. Tomorrow, right here in Covington, Indiana, Will Ag will host a Farm Bill panel. And during the week in Washington, D.C., a couple of different hearings will be held. On Tuesday, anti-hunger advocates will fan out across Capitol Hill to meet with key lawmakers about their priorities going into the next farm bill, no doubt with a big focus on defending SNAP from potential cuts or block grants. House Agriculture Committee subpanels will hold a pair of hearings on Thursday this week, too, centered on the bill. The first will be at 10 a.m. before the Subcommittee on Commodity Exchanges, Energy and Credit. It will consider rural development and energy programs. And at 2 p.m. on Thursday, the Subcommittee on Biotechnology, Horticulture, and Research will dig into specialty crops. The FDA will hold a meeting this week, too, to discuss the use of the term healthy in food product labeling. It will offer important looks at where various food makers and health groups are on the idea of updating the agency's definition of healthy as it relates to labeling. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where President Donald Trump has appointed Stephen Vaughn, a veteran trade litigator, to the key position of U.S. Trade Representative General Counsel and has asked him to serve as acting USTR, U.S. Trade Representative. Vaughn has been widely expected to get the General Counsel position. Trump appointed Vaughn to be General Counsel on Thursday of last week, a move that does not require Senate confirmation. And finally today, Clayton Yiner, the boisterous Nebraskan who served as Agriculture Secretary from 1989 to 1991 under President George H.W. Bush and that laid the groundwork for NAFTA, died over the weekend at his home in Potomac, Maryland. He was 86. On a personal note, Clayton Yiner was the very first sitting U.S. Secretary of Agriculture I had the pleasure of interviewing. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you have tickets for our all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House tomorrow in Covington, Indiana, the doors open at 8 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. in the Central Time Zone. Really looking forward to having you there. You can find details of the whole day and the schedule on our website, WILLAG.org. Now up next, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway of Texas says negotiating a new farm bill this year will bring certainty for agriculture. Well, following his address to Commodity Classic attendees last Friday, Conaway spoke to the press, saying negotiating a new farm bill now, this year, is the right thing to do.
I can't find one person who says, no, I really like the drama of an expiration. I like the drama of a short-term extension. I like the drama of a permanent law coming back. So it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for a lot of reasons. Eliminating the uncertainty of all that, putting together a five-year plan that producers and bankers and others can look at to say, so it's the right thing to do.
He says the next farm bill will not be as complicated as the 2014 bill.
It will not be as complicated in terms of new stuff as it was in 14. We're talking about dairy and the ARC and PLC, fine-tuning those. And seeing how they worked or didn't work. Obviously, the stacks is the one folks thing that we'll jettison and try to get cotton back into Title I in some form or fashion. In all likelihood, it'll be seed versus lint.
Conaway explains the different direction the House Ag Committee is taking to negotiating the next farm bill when it comes to the nutrition program.
In 14, we just kind of snuck up on the SNAP changes. We didn't lay the groundwork. We've now laid the groundwork with 17 hearings on what we need to do with SNAP, what's working, what's not working. And we put out a paper in December. This will be the guide. So we'll have more fulsome reforms to propose on SNAP than in the past. So that might offset the lack of complications, in fact, on the farm bill side. But, you know, every chairman who's ever stood here has said they're going to get done on time, and I'm just driven to do it. I'm a CPA. I start my meetings on time, as you know. We're going to get this done.
Both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees have held farm bill-related hearings already this year. The current farm bill expires at the end of 2018. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Dan O'Brien. He's an agricultural economist with K-State University Extension. Thanks so much for being with us, Dan. We always talk with you a little bit about the agricultural energies. Can you tell me about the ethanol market in the United States at this point? There have been some record-breaking months and days and weeks of production over the last, 12 months or so.
Yes, the highest numbers that we see anyway, reported by the Energy Information Administration in terms of a weekly ethanol production happened towards the end of January, about at a pace basically of about 5.8 billion bushels of corn used, rate of ethanol usage that would be equivalent to that. Since that time, as we moved off into February, we softened a little bit down to about 5.7, 5.6 and a half, something like that, in terms of the equivalent national production number. Of course, right now the USDA is projecting about 5.35 billion bushels of corn actually used. So we've been seeing some strong pace, strong ethanol usage paces, and you wonder eventually, Todd, if that will lead us to seeing the USDA have to raise that number up even to higher record levels. You know, do we end up at 5.4, 5.45, et cetera? I don't know. A lot will depend, of course, on the price of corn on the one hand and price of ethanol on the other.
What are the driving factors behind this?
Well, I think going back as far as early 2015, we've seen ethanol prices drop to about $1.50 or so per gallon of ethanol, and we've moved during that time frame as low as $1.25, as high as about $1.60. Here of late, we had gotten up to again $1.55, $1.60 within the last several months, and now we've seen a bit of a decline, have dropped down to about $1.39 as of the last week here in March. Of course, what determines profitability is how that price compares to the actual cost of production. We had been seeing for a good part of 2016 that the actual cost of production be lower than the price of ethanol. Well, here just within the last, in January, February, and now very early March, the cost has jumped up over the price about 8 to 10 cents. Again, price about $1.39 on the week ending March 3rd, and that cost, by at least by our estimates, of about $1.49 a gallon. So with that, you have a net loss, temporary probably, of about 10 cents a gallon. Where this thing goes in the future in terms of profitability will depend on, of course, where corn prices go as we move off into the next several months. There's some, as we deal with production risk, basically, I think all throughout the United States, that will affect corn prices, and we'll be comparing the cost of production in ethanol plants to the strength of ethanol sales. And of course, with that, what happens to the gasoline market, motor fuels market, between RBOB gasoline and ethanol
on the other side, we'll have a lot to do with just how that ethanol price holds up, and of course that'll drive, along with DDG prices, of course that'll drive profitability in ethanol plants, and I guess we'll see, Todd, where these forces take us by the time we get to the fall of 2017.
What do we know about the market for DDGs at this time, and how it's being built into the structure for ethanol production?
Well, DDG prices have been weakening, since last spring. And here, just within the last week or so, they broke up above about $100 per ton. Had been down within the last several weeks to 98, 97, 96, something like that. Of course, there had been announcements about how China was going to handle our DDGs or not, and a lot of factors in play. So the drop that we'd seen since about April, May of when DDG prices were at $150 to $155, $160 per a ton, down to this $100 a ton level, no doubt here in January, February, has had something to do with, had a fair amount to do with losses of $8 to $10 a gallon by our calculations. Well, here within the last week or so, we've seen DDG prices move a little bit higher, and that to the degree that would hold up. And again, in the overall feed market, as corn tends to move a little bit higher, we'll probably see DDGs go up with it just because of their competitive structure, quasi-competitive structure. So as DDG prices go up, that will help to mitigate a little bit the higher corn prices that are going into ethanol plants.
Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate you being with us for the day, and we'll talk with you again in another month.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Dan O'Brien is an Extension Agricultural Economist at Kansas State University. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension, joined now by Brian Stark at the Andersons. He'll be with us at the Beef House in Covington tomorrow. Looking forward to it, Brian.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to interacting with all the people that will be showing up for the meeting. Good to be here today.
Okay, so a couple of quick things. I know this FC Stone puts out some numbers today for corn and soybean production out of Brazil. They're really big, 93 and nearly 110 for their soybean number. Can they possibly be of that size, do you think?
It's hard to imagine, but given some of the good weather that Brazil has seen and most of the flooding being a little bit blown up out of proportion for Argentina, I think, you know, moving forward, the crop could be as big as what they're forecasting. And I guess time will tell as we get deeper into their harvest period of March. And it just puts added pressure on our acreage report here March 31st to see exactly how the American producer is going to allocate his acres this year.
What do you think they'll do?
I really think that bean acres are probably somewhere around 88 million, could be as high as 90, depending on who you talk to. But corn probably still in the 91 to 92 million acreage area. I think, you know, from our perspective, we've been thinking the total acreage pie between the two commodities is about 180 million acres, and it just depends on how you split it. Either way, I think there's going to be plenty of corn and bean acres to go around.
How's basis in our area acting?
Yeah, I think right now you've seen mostly people, as they've rolled to the May contract, have just taken the spread. So we haven't seen a lot of improvement. But if you talk to the processor, it doesn't seem like they're buying a lot of beans where they're currently at versus the May contract. So I suspect that as we get closer and close to planting, basis should see some firmness, at least on the old crop side for both corn and soybeans.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn tonight, we are $3.58. New crop fall corn out of the field is $3.73. Cash soybeans, $10.15. New crop fall beans at $9.92. And new crop July wheat is $4.53.
Thanks so much, and we'll see you tomorrow, Brian.
Sounds good, Todd. Thank you.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons and will be with us at the Beef House tomorrow. Back in 2 minutes. On this Monday afternoon, let's check out the agricultural weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Thanks for being with us today, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about what you see in the marketplace as it relates to weather across not only the United States, but in South America. And I think I want to start here because there's been a lot of talk about drought.
Why is there such an increase in concern about drought when we're seeing all these big precipitation amounts across various areas of the U.S.? Now, granted, that is the majority of the U.S., but there are a few dry pockets around. And actually, it's interesting if you look at the past 30 to 90 day maps. Here in Illinois, southern Illinois, and kind of centered on the St. Louis area, but southern Illinois extending into Missouri, that's been the epicenter of the driest conditions, which I think is kind of where you're coming from here, Todd, with maybe some of the increase in concern. But if you go outside of that zone, actually it's been pretty wet, especially across areas of the western U.S., portions of the northern plains, and then some scattered areas in the southern U.S., but the southern part of the Midwest, down into the northern delta, and then Kansas has been on the dry side, just thinking for plains, hard red winter wheat here. And that's actually one area, in fact, the plains region overall of the southern plains hard red winter wheat belt will be drier than normal over the next couple of weeks. But as that region is on the dry side, we are going to see an increase in rainfall across areas of the Delta, the Midwest, and Southeast, helping to improve soil moisture here prior to summer crop planting.
I'm told that when we look into South America, trucks are finally beginning to move on the BR-163. What do we know about weather over the next several days there?
Well, we're seeing a continuation of rain activity across Mato Grosso, which is actually pretty normal for this time of year. Again, this early part of March is still kind of peak of the rainy season, or when the probabilities are highest of daily thunderstorm development. As we go through the second half of this month, though, those probabilities start their decline. And so it's not out of the question that, there will continue to be rains even deeper into March. But overall, we're not seeing any of the real excessive amounts, such as what we saw back a few weeks ago. But nonetheless, there will continue to be rain activity and likely some additional delays in transportation of the harvested soybean crop.
Anything else around the planet that we need to keep track of?
Well, there's been more distinct dryness in portions of Australia. That is going to be improving in eastern Australia here coming up. Not totally solving some of the dryness, but definitely helping to stabilize their summer crops, at least their non-irrigated summer crops there. But some of the dryness needs to be watched. If it doesn't fully improve, it needs to be watched for a winter crop planting here in a few months.
Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
And of course, Mark Russo, he's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Do visit our website. There you can find all of our agricultural programming to listen to on demand anytime you'd like. The address there, willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.